8:15 nearly, and Japan's trade restriction on certain materials that are vital for South Korea's tech industry. We're set to be discussed now at the World Trade Organization's General Council meeting in Geneva tomorrow and Wednesday local time. And in the meantime, there is a high chance that Japan will hold a cabinet meeting to decide whether to go even further. Not only are Korean companies and the local economy under threat, but the free trade regime that sees firms here form part of a global chain. We've got two experts on international trade law joining us on the line. Professor Tanya Voon from Melbourne Law School at the University of Melbourne. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Professor Brian Mercurio from the Faculty of Law at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. Thank you also for joining us. Good morning.
Great. Delighted to be with you. Thank you.
I'm coming back to you first, Professor Voon. You were actually, just like Professor Mercurio, quoted in a New York Times article titled Japan Cites National Security and Free Trade Crackdown. Sound familiar? Question mark. So did this seem straight out of President Donald Trump's playbook to you, Professor Voon?
Well, it does sound a little like President Trump's actions and his invocation of national security as a justification, for example, in relation to tariffs that he's imposed on imports of steel and aluminium from nearly all trading partners. But on the other hand, it's not just Trump, it's not just the United States that have been using this kind of justification of national security in recent months, in recent years. There are a number of other countries as well that have been doing so, and that stands in sharp contrast to the earlier restraint that WTO members have shown in invoking national security. So, for example, recently Russia invoked national security to justify trade restrictions on Ukraine. That was determined by a WTO panel. The United Arab Emirates invoked national security in relation to trade restrictions it imposed on Qatar, which is currently in a WTO dispute hearing. And Australia, for example, effectively banned Chinese companies Huawei and ZTE from its 5G mobile telecommunications rollout and would justify this on the basis of national security. And that, although it's not in a WTO dispute, has been raised by China in WTO committee meetings.
Professor Mercurio, on the same issue, if we look back to the timing of this announcement, it came after the G20 summit. You would think, perhaps on the one hand, that Prime Minister Shinzo Abe had time to at least get a feel of President Trump's potential response at some of his frequent conversation placings, including in Osaka when they convened for that G20 summit. On the other hand, the announcement being made after the G20 summit and when the world was very much distracted, you might say, by what was happening in North Korea and, at the Korean border, but with North Korea and that amazing meeting between President Trump and Chairman Kim Jong-un at the border. What should we read into all that in terms of the timing? Do you feel that Prime Minister Abe was borrowing from Trump?
Well, you'd have to think. I mean, President Abe is Prime Minister Abe is sophisticated. Japan is sophisticated. I don't think they took this measure without carefully thinking about it, and certainly about the wider context as well. I mean, we have this ongoing trade dispute between U.S. and China. We have the WTO in crisis. We have protectionism on the rise. So I think the tensions between Korea and Japan are just kind of the latest chapter and the latest challenge to the system. We have these tensions ongoing for several years, but the timing is probably right, both in terms of the year as well as in the exact day timing, you're right, to take these measures at this time. I mean, you have two trading powers, you have elements of protectionism here, you have international politics at play, you have national security issues, wider ramifications, which I'm sure we'll discuss in a few minutes. So it's all very intriguing, but to answer your question directly, I think certainly that, Japan would not have wanted to surprise the U.S. with these measures, and certainly discussions behind the scenes would have taken place.
So, Professor Voon, you touched on this question of national security and the way it's played into the Huawei dispute as well. But the particular context of South Korea is rather odd. Yes, you could say President Moon Jae-in has been very open to talks and cooperation with North Korea. But he has been generally staying focused on restrictions placed by the United States. And if anything, reports indicate it's Japan that's been actually occasionally turning a blind eye to United Nations Security Council resolutions and sanctions over the last few years. And several UN reports have shown that over the last few days. So speaking from an international legal perspective, it at best, it looks like a very double-sided stance from Japan at this point.
Yes, I think there are a number of different arguments in play, and Japan, as I understand, would maintain that South Korea's export controls are insufficient, so these materials are at risk of going through South Korea into North Korea. But as you say, that would require some evidence. From a legal perspective, it would also require justification to show that that really is Japan's fear and that it has grounds for that fear, which might be questionable. And also that it's not just a pretext for addressing non-trade concerns. Professor Mercurio referred to political, international politics. So is it really a pretext for other political, diplomatic disputes, for example, in relation to Korean court decisions about the ability of private citizens to bring claims against Japanese companies?
And what's at stake here, Professor Mercurio? You're also quoted in the Times article as saying if this weaponization of trade dispute is used too often, there's a real potential to absolutely destroy the entire international trade system. Can you elaborate a little further?
Sure. I mean, the point here is simply that the WTO, really, as with any legal order, requires adherence, enforceability, and respect. You know, the WTO is really in crisis mode at this time. It's facing threats that it hasn't faced previously, and I'm not sure it's responding well to them. So if, you know, not only Russia and the United Arab Emirates and Japan take these measures, but if we get other countries, if China, if the EU, if others follow, you know, the U.S. example here in claiming national security, especially when the grounds for doing so are dubious, respect for the law becomes in doubt, and the system could really break down and collapse. So I think what we're seeing here is a repeat, to some extent, really of what occurred even in the GATT prior to the formation of the WTO. Large players lost confidence in the ability of the system to protect their interests, and then they took measures into their own hands unilaterally. You know, if this is possible to occur at this stage as well, and it's quite worrying.
Professor Voon, perhaps there's hope from a South Korean perspective that if other nations in the chain hurt enough, then it will broaden the base for the protest rather than just having some of the big tech companies here lead the complaints. What are your thoughts?
Yes, I think that's a potential that would be helpful to South Korea, and that's something that may be discussed in the WTO. As you suggested, it's going to be discussed in the WTO's General Council in the coming days, and that will be an opportunity for other WTO members to put forward their views. In relation to those discussions, it's also important to recognise that this is not yet, as far as I'm aware, a WTO dispute, so simply raising it in those committees is separate from the WTO dispute settlement system, and I think that that's an important point and one that's hopefully encouraging. It may be that it's just left there and does not become a WTO dispute, because in the end, I think in order to avoid some of these major concerns that Professor Mercurio was talking about, I think it is actually important that we don't have a WTO ruling on it, which may sound counterintuitive. We do already have a national security ruling, as I suggested in the Russia-Ukraine case. Perhaps fortunately that ruling wasn't appealed, so we have only a panel ruling on what national security means, how this security exception operates. I think that really what we really want is WTO members to resolve these issues on their own, to resolve them in groupings and through discussions, and not have a legal answer, which is what we had in the past, that restraint by the WTO members not bringing these kinds of disputes, not invoking this exception, and so that, because I think if we do get a WTO ruling from a WTO panel, from a WTO appellate body, You can't really win. There's no good answer. The panel that we had took a middle way, which perhaps would have satisfied different parties. But really, if you have on one extreme a national security exception, that is seen very broadly, it can be really be a huge loophole that will just swallow the whole system. On the other hand, if you have a very narrow exception that's subject to a lot of judicial review and scrutiny, then you do have a real risk of that a country such as the United States is going to withdraw from the system, and that would really, I think, be the end of the system itself.
Yeah, can I just stay with you, Professor Voon, for a moment there? So we've got this apparent conflict, or perhaps it could be portrayed as a conflict in the media, between GATT, or General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, Article 11 and Article 21, and South Korea might appeal to one and Japan to the other. Can you just explain further?
Yes, so South Korea would be highlighting, and probably will do in the General Council discussions, highlighting possible violations of WTO obligations of, for example, Article 11, as you said, which prohibits quantitative restrictions such as import quotas, import and export licences, because instead what you're supposed to have is tariffs, so charges, customs duties, and not these kinds of quotas or import or export bans. It could also point to the most favoured nation obligation in GATT Article 1 and say that these Japanese measures are violating that obligation. When you refer to GATT Article 21, yes, that's what Japan would likely be referring to, and that is an exception to those obligations. So Japan could say, well, even if we violate those obligations provisionally, that apparent violation is justified under the security exception, and therefore it's not a violation and we don't have to do anything, we don't have to change anything. And the way that they would be doing that would be to say, we consider this action necessary for the protection of our essential security interests, and those interests either relate to materials that are used to supply military establishments, or they're taken in time of an emergency in international relations.
So going back to you, Professor Mercurio, the main concern that I would have, and maybe many others just looking on from a fairly non-academic point of view, would be just that the World Trade Organization seems to be very limited in what it can ultimately do, especially when dealing with very large economic powers like Japan. And we've got such strong historical issues at stake with a lot of pride in the mix. It could take years and it could be ultimately unsatisfying. And in that time, South Korea's economy could be just dripping along. What are your thoughts on that concern?
Well, I mean, in many ways, you're correct. The system can only deal with what's presented to it. You know, a dispute panel can only hear a case and make a decision if a dispute is filed. I think the panel that Professor Voon referred to has done a good job in narrowing the scope of Article 21 somewhat, in saying it's not completely self-judging for countries to decide. You know, members will be held to some legal standard. But, you know, even if there is a case, it will take years. And as you say, it's almost cold comfort if the economy, you know, drips along, as you say, in the meantime. I don't expect, I mean, just looking at it from a political economy point of view, I don't expect things to get better anytime soon. Actually, I think the world economy and this situation of using the
Could get worse before it gets better, it sounds like, Professor Mercurio, because we are out of time there. Thank you, Professor Mercurio and Professor Voon. Wonderful to have both of you on the line today.